Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you leave? Tears are falling from your face. I never
And welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. You know, we've been running this show for many years now, every Friday night. And we bring you a new story or a new topic. And if you have a chance to check us out, pull it up at blogtalkradio.com. And you look under Brain Injury Radio, you will find our link. And on that link, we also listed a few websites. One of the first ones is, it is Advanced Mobile Filtration Services, and they are at amfsfiltration.com. We have our good friends at vets4vetleadership.org. They're all about putting veterans in political office. We have the NationalFlagFoundation.org. National Flag Foundation is really big on maintaining the history of our great flag and protecting it from its misuse and destruction. What you will find with our good friends at the National Flag Foundation is they truly, truly honor our flag. Then also the organization that I work for, the Point Pleasant River Museum, pprivermuseum.com. We have a new, brand new river museum and Lake and Ray Cook Learning Center that focuses on the history of America's inland waterway systems known as rivers. We have historical artifacts going back to thousands of years old. And we're in the middle of a rebuild and a remodel, and we can use all the help and support we can get to get that open. Also want to talk to you about two good friends of mine, Craig Sawman Sawyer, who is leading. He is a United States Navy SEAL. He was a Marine before he was that. He's one tough dude. Look him up. Personal friend. He also runs vetsforchildrescue.org. Look that organization up. They're all about catching child predators files and really bringing them to justice. They also do a lot of work down on our U.S. border with Mexico and have documented and helped to capture many traffickers. There are a bunch of ex-special operators, and they've even got, folks spread out all over the country. Some folks that are, you know, working on the internet. It's really amazing how quickly and how easily it has been for them to be able to capture these child predators. And I'm going to ask Craig to come on to this show and be a guest to talk about what his organization does, just because he does so much good. And he's just a cool dude. My gosh, he's a cool dude. You look him up, he's never sleeps. I don't think he sleeps. Him or the other friend that I'm getting ready to tell you about, Boone Cutler. Boone Cutler is, also a combat wounded veteran, personal friend, has Boone Cutler Media. So if you just go to BooneCutler.com, that's B-O-O-N-E Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R. Man, you want to talk about a guy that has a blog talk radio show that tells it like it is. Him and Craig Sawman Sawyer have been on many shows together. And look, they're doing God's work, folks. Let me just tell you, these are two men that love the Lord. They love the Lord, and they openly profess to their love for God. So just understand that not only are they true warriors, but they are warriors that love God, and they're looking to make this world a better place, especially for children. The most helpless group of people that we have, folks, are children. And these pedophiles, I'm going to tell you something. I posted the word pedophile on a Facebook post. Basically, I'll tell you exactly what I said. You know, I said they were talking about punishment for these pedophiles. I said, well, some of them deserve the electric chair. Okay? Now, I think that that's true, because especially if they murder and they hack up these kids and they rape these kids and they do these horrible things, why not? You know what I mean? I'm not talking about, going out and being a vigilante here. I'm talking about, justice that will bring them to justice, will allow them an opportunity to pay for their crime here on earth and then get saved prayerfully before they get in that electric chair. But they've got to get in there, okay? You've got to do something with it, because most of them will not change. They're catching the same people over and over and over again. They're teachers. There's some preachers that are out there. There's police officers that are out there. There are people that you would never think. Lots of politicians, too, for these same clowns over and over and over again. And when we've got good people that are running for office, and you can find them at vetsforvetleadership.org. You want to find somebody to vote for? Go to vetsforvetleadership.org. And if we bring them on this show or we talk about them, then that's who you should be voting for. I'm telling you, stop voting for the aristocracy, because they are doing nothing but taking trips to the island, and they're doing terrible things, okay? And I'm not talking about, you know, that's kind of a metaphor statement, but I'm just saying that they are doing things that are horrible for our country. Look around. It's not getting any better. But you keep electing the same clowns. Look in your own backyard, your own mayor. Look in your cities. Look in your states. You're voting for somebody because of a name and not because of what they can actually do. We've got to get off that bandwagon. You need to start getting people in there that have actually had a job. Why would you vote for a bum that's never had a job? A damn bum that's never had a job, okay? That's never, ever had a job. Why would you do that? Why would you vote for someone that has spent their entire life sucking on the silver spoon that their mommy or their daddy put in their mouth, who their mommy and their daddy put it in their mouth? And if you go back, you'll find out there were probably scoundrels back during the Great Depression that took people's farms and land. And I can tell you, we keep voting in these folks. Now, they, you know, I've heard people get mad about the term carpetbaggers and everything else. But look at what you got coming into your community. You know, I mean, stop laying down for these folks. You know, stop. We've got to do better. We've got to do better. So those are some things that are going on. And I get fired up because it's like I keep seeing, you know, these, you know, let me tell you what it is. Child trafficking, drug trafficking. They're all bad. And I'm not talking about the local kid that smokes some weed every now and then. I'm talking about, no joke, mules and child and drug traffickers and child trafficking folks that are selling children into slavery. Now, all these people are talking about retribution for slavery back in the 1800s. How about the slavery that's going on right now, brothers and sisters? Instead of worrying about getting $300,000 for your damn self, what you need to be worrying about is how to stop the childhood slavery that's occurring back in Africa and in South America and in different places around the world. Or how about the trafficking that goes on here, where our kids are being kidnapped and taken overseas, stowed away on ship, taken to be somebody's sex slave in the Middle East. And if you don't think it's happening, you better think again, because it is happening. You wait till you talk to some of these parents. I'm going to have some of these parents on here who have lost their children. They've never found their children. They only pray that one day somebody like Craig Sawyer or some group that has no problem going in, kicking in somebody's door and kicking in their teeth at the same time, will go in and rescue their child before it's too late. But I mentioned something about pedophile on Facebook, and I got a warning. Hey, that goes against our standard. What, calling somebody a pedophile? You're a pedophile if you do things like raping and harming these children. You're a no good, rotten pedophile. That's what you are. And God will judge you much more harshly than I will, or these groups that are out here hunting you down and embarrass you when we catch you and put you on camera. And trust me, there's a lot of them that do it. God bless them. Love them to death, you predator poachers that are out there. Love you. Keep putting on the videos. And guess what? They get their videos taken down all the time, even though these people are arrested. Now, I can put a picture up of a single mom that's getting evicted because they couldn't pay the bill. But, boy, you try to put a picture of some politician that was going to meet some 13-year-old kid for sex that was set up by these predator poachers. Oh, no, no, no. That goes against their rights. Get the heck out of town, folks. We've let the foxes into the hen house. I wonder why we ain't got no eggs and why we ain't got no chickens. You wonder why your economy is going to tank. Banks are closing. The drug cartels, they can come into America and they take whoever they want. They can come kidnap you right now. And nobody's going to come and look for you. Oh, my goodness gracious. Anyways, thank God for Craig Sawman Sawyer and Boone Cutler and my wonderful friends, and they're my friends, and I love them dearly. I pray for them every day. And let me tell you something, you guys in West Virginia that are doing this nasty stuff, I'm telling you, you're for you. Especially you guys that are out there running your mouth on social media and thinking that you're above the law and thinking that you're pushing some sort of an agenda and you're protected because you're in some alphabet group. You are not protected when you harm a child. They're going to catch you because you are easy to catch, because you're dumb. Thank you for being dumb, because it makes our job easier. And I can say that, folks, and you can play this a million times, and these idiots won't get it. They'll still do it. The dragnet's out, and it's wide and it's big. And who knows? You might get caught by the guys who call the cops, and you might get caught by the guys who just might beat the living daylights out of you. Or maybe do both. No quarter for a child rapist. No quarter for them. Okay? They are worse than Al-Qaeda. They are the scourge of the earth. They are evil and they're wicked. Jesus Christ himself said that whomsoever shall harm one of these little ones, it would be better for a millstone to be tied around their neck than for them to be cast into the depths of the sea. That same thing goes for the drug peddlers that are pushing the heroin with the fentanyl in it that's killing those children. Would be better for you to have a millstone around your neck and jump into the deepest part of the ocean. Oh, I know some of them, they go through and they never get caught. They think they never get caught until they get to that critical point to where they're getting ready to go face God. And it's like, you know what? I never did answer for that sin. I would tell you, folks, there's a lot of good things that are going on in America, and there's a lot of bad things that are going on. The good things that are going on is people are waking up all across this country. It's beautiful to see it, too. They wake up, they're like, wow, you know, my eyes are open. I can see, you know, you got friends. We've got friends. And look, we hang out with friends of like minds, okay? So we have friends, you know, married couple friends that love their children, love God. They're watching out. They're doing the same thing. We watch out for them. They watch out for us. We're watching each other six all the time. And I'm telling you, that's where we need to be in America. That's the way America used to be, you know? You could go down if you were a kid. Listen, I get it. The kids that are growing up now, everybody's got a cell phone. So it's like nothing you do really escapes because they'll get a cell phone. But in my time, if you went downtown, every neighbor knew who you were and knew who your parents were. And they had permission to grab you up by the scruff of the neck and slap your behind if you were doing something wrong, because it takes a village to raise a child. And we all took care of each other. We looked out for each other. We wouldn't let our kids get locked out of a house or be beat up in the middle of the street by a bunch of hoodlums. We'd come out and we would beat the tar out of these people. And we're not looking out for each other. That's not my business. But let me take out my cell phone and I'll video it. That's great. I'm glad y'all are videoing it, because sometimes we're able to catch people because of your video. But let's be realistic. You're only videoing it because you want to upload it on your YouTube or one of your channels and try to get a million likes so you can monetize off of it. Meanwhile, some kid has been drug off into a car, or somebody has been pulverized by a gang of hoodlums, and you did nothing. I got two great big old dogs. Let me tell you something. You come out and do that stuff in front of my house, I'm letting them loose on you. A big 110-pound German Shepherd and a boxer. He's not very big, but he's the most vicious one that'll get you, and he'll get you. They will get you. People are like, man, James has lost his mind. No, I have found my mind. The being civil, I'm still civil. I want to be civil. I want to have a civil conversation. I want us to be able to work things out as citizens, but I am growing very tired of this criminal element of thugs that are constantly hurting our children. You are the enemy. As a matter of fact, you are a bigger enemy to me than the enemy that attacked me in Iraq. You are an enemy, and I am going to look for you and watch for you and do everything in my power to make sure that you're arrested or caught. Because that's just what we do. And old scores will be settled. Understand this. Old scores will be settled. Because I know there are some people that are adults that have been harmed by this. Don't think that I've forgotten. Don't think that I don't still have their picture burnt into my memory. And don't think that my good buddies all over this country don't have their image burned into their memory too. They actually got actual pictures. Find Jesus or find justice, because it's coming. God said that too, right? For justice comes quickly. This life is too short for this, you know, and I hate sitting around worrying about what's going on with my kids all the time, but I do. I have to worry about it because of the weak, pansy-ass way that we're dealing with these pedophiles and letting them out. They do not change. They do not change. No matter how long you hold their head under the water, they will not change. For a guy that has 8 kids and 12 grandkids, I have a whole lot to be fighting for. Anyways, so we see that going on. And let's just take a look at some other things that are going on in the world. But again, a big shout out to my friends, Boone Cutler and Craig Sawyer. God bless you all. Y'all are just wonderful. Thank you for what you're doing. Keep on doing it. Whatever you need. I'm sending you money. I'm giving you my time, my effort, and we're finding a whole lot of volunteers down here that's going to help bring these low lives to justice. All right. All right. Let's see here. I'm looking for the story on the drone that was downed. That was downed by the Russian fighter jet. So let me give you my opinion on that. The Russian fire, the drone should have taken action to try to take that jet out. When you make a move, an aggressive move, then, you know, I don't know. I mean, most of those have a self-destruct mode. They probably should have implemented as soon as that MiG made contact. Yeah. Why is that? Because we're getting tired of being pushed around, America, pushing the Chinese and the Russians. Keep pushing and pushing. And then you got the cartels that are pushing and pushing. And then we've got our own plague in this country, you know, with these child traffickers pushing and pushing. At what time do we actually grow a set and we stand up and we do the right thing? I mean, obviously, we don't have the right people in the White House right now. We definitely don't have them in the DOD either. What are they going to do? Take my Purple Hearts away? I don't care. At this point in time, it's time to just tell the truth. Tell the truth. We need to tell the truth. That brings me to another point. This show, we can get a little lively on here. Now, we got a pretty good show coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about St. Patrick's Day, and our good friend Rich Kilblain is going to talk about the changes that have occurred with the drug cartels in Mexico and why he believes that we probably should take some sort of serious action. If you remember, we've talked about this before, and we were kind of on opposite sides, and this is why. And I'm hearing what Rich is saying, okay, and I really am. We don't want to create a war with Mexico. However, we have to hold Mexico accountable, you know, for what they are allowing to happen within their borders that's oozing into our borders. So let me just give you a for instance. If we had this massive chemical fire and we turn on the fans and we blew all the fumes down into Mexico, and that sickness and that disease was spewing across the border and they couldn't stop it, how long do you think before they would get really mad and start demanding that we do something? Turn the fans off. Go, you need to do something. Because if you don't, I have a sense that we've got some political leaders and eventually we're going to get a new president. I promise you that. That's going to want to take action in regards to this to the drug cartels, and I hope he does. And I hope it's action with Tomahawk missiles, drone strikes, whatever. And then you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out how much we love our children, and how much we're not going to put up with this crap no more. So, are we America or are we not America? That's the question that's being proposed by several people. There is a constant, let me read this, folks. I got my glasses on, so give me a break here, okay? I'm getting older. I got to use glasses now. So America is polling its population to determine, is America truly America now? So what do you think about that? Are we the America that was the ones that established our freedom, or have we lost that ability? Some believe that there is a Marxist movement within our nation that is fully funded by the Russians and the Chinese to destabilize our country and to create havoc and chaos through a extreme leftist liberal agenda. Now, I didn't say that, folks. This is being said by thousands and thousands of other Americans who obviously have woke up and said, you know what, there's something going on here. They cite specifically the LGBTQ movement and the feminist movement and the current BLM movement. It's constantly pitting us one against the other based on race, sex, gender, or sexual orientation. Unbelievable. And they're winning because we're stupid and we're letting it happen. Or at least some of us are. At least our politicians on the left side of the aisle surely are. And some on the right. I don't understand, because I don't understand the mind of a person that's never had a damn job in their life. And you keep electing these people because I don't vote for them. Okay? I believe we should have a civil conversation and a civilized government. I do. But I can tell you this, I have never voted for one of those leftist Marxist loons in my life. And the first thing I'm looking for before I cast a vote for any of them is, have you ever had a real job? I'm not talking about going to college. That's not a real job. Damn it, that's not a real job. Thank you for going. I sat in a college chair for many years. It's hard. It's great. God bless you for doing it. But a real job is someone that gets up, and if you don't show up in the right time, in the right uniform, at the right place, doing the right things, you will lose that job. Not, well, you're going to have to go see the dean. Believe me, I went to college too, many years. So I understand the difference between working and this. We have politicians that literally have never had a damn job. Unless it's working for their family company. In West Virginia, Manchin, Capito, those two names come into effect, Justice, they've all got money. And they've been born into it. And they might like to tell you how hard they work. Trust me, I know they don't work. Miller, that's another one. Mooney. Hey, I don't hate these people. But I'm just telling you, they're not a representation of us, we the people. Because we the people are getting up and putting our work boots on and going to work every day. Because if we don't, we can't pay our bills. And guess what? They turn our water off and turn our electric off, and they will repossess your car and kick you out of your home if you don't pay your bills. Do you think they're doing it to any of those folks that you keep voting for? Wake up, America. What was that guy that said that? There was a radio guy that said that. Wake up, America. He was right. And he was saying the same thing. But you know what? It wasn't so bad. It wasn't so prevalent. They hid it pretty good. They kept it buried. Now they don't even try to hide it. It's just, that's the kind of people you've got. And it's in every state. Florida and Texas and Virginia is looking a little bit better every day. Some places anyways. But some places, man, I can't even believe it. How do you, thank God Chicago finally got them a new mayor. I mean, Beetlejuice had to go back home. I'm just telling you. It was terrible. Crime was rampant. So many people killed. And mainly African-Americans were killed. And not killed by white cops, but killed by other African-Americans. Again, wake up, America. Know who your real enemy is. Okay, so now we're going to go into St. Patrick's Day, because I have taken way too long on this, and obviously you can tell I'm a little bit fired up right now, okay? Not drunk, don't have anything like that going on with me, but I'm telling you, I love my country, I love my flag, I served 22 years in the Army in two damn wars, and got shot three different times, and I can tell you this right now, folks, I am not going to lay down and let this thuggery come in and destroy the country that I have bled for and my friends have died for. And if you either are with me or you are against me, and I pray that you're with me, because we got plenty of enemy out there. Real enemies, folks. People that will take everything you have. They don't mind doing that. I love it. They said, we're going to give you the biggest tax break in the history of the state or the history of the country. Meanwhile, They're distracting you so they can get to your wallet. They're distracting you with the pennies that you're putting in your front pocket so they can reach in your back pocket and pull that wallet out and get the bills out. You want to have your country get back on track? Start electing veterans and people that have had a damn job in their life and not been born into it. Sick of lazy bums. If you wouldn't hire them to work to cut your grass, then why in the heck would you hire them to be your congressman or your senator or your delegate or your governor? If I wouldn't hire you to cut my grass, I'm darn sure not voting for you. You think I'd hire Joe Biden to cut my grass? No. All right, I know there's some people in here that love Joe Biden. I get it. He's a likable guy. I know Rich loves him. Rich is going to give me heck whenever I bring him on. He is hammering me right now. Rich is like, yes. Rich is like, did you vote for him? No, Rich, I did not vote for him. But what I did say is we need to have a civil conversation in America. We do. I will listen to this LGBTQ community until they get to the point to where they demand that I listen. You ask me and I'll listen. You demand that my ears shut down. It's just like when you call me on the phone to try to sell me something and you act like a smart aleck, I hang up the phone. But if you're civil and you're decent and you're nice, I'll listen to you. I'll still tell you no, most likely, but I'll at least listen to you. And that's where we're at in America. We don't, but I'm going to tell you right now, if they have never had a job, don't talk to me until you've worked a 40-hour shift and you have worked in the outside, in the elements, or you have served in the United States military someplace. I don't care if it's in California or if it's in Timbuktu. But unless you've done that, don't come and ask me for my vote because you won't get it. And I don't care who your mom is. I don't care who your dad is. And I don't care who your grandpa is. I don't care because you are not them. That's why we kicked the king out of America, because we got tired of aristocracy and we got tired of a king and a family running everything. Get the hell out of here. That's not what we're about. And you people that keep voting for these people because their mother or their dad or this or that, you are Tories, 100%. You are the Tories of today because you support the king and the queen mentality. You better read your Constitution and stop skipping the parts that you shouldn't be skipping. And you better read your Bible, too. And understand whenever it says, thou shalt not. All right. Yeah. Hey, Rich, I'm going to bring you on there. That float was funny, man. Listen, I laugh at jokes about myself. Because if something's funny, it's funny. A guy told me a funny joke the other day. And I'm going to tell this joke, and I'm going to try not to mess it up. Okay. And it's a clean joke, okay? He says, what do you call a duck that's good at math? I don't know. He said, a quackulator. It's funny, right? It's funny. It's clean. It's funny. All right. So anyways, I'm going to bring you guys on because I know Rich is ready to tear me a new one right now. Rich, you on?
Yeah, but before we do that, I think we need to let Father Michael talk about St. Patrick since it's
St.
Patrick.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, I agree with you.
All right. but I should add before he talks about the real St. Patty, that why we celebrate this feast day for one of our patron saints, the patron saint of Ireland who, because of Irish becoming Christians, spread Enlightenment and Christianity through the rest of Europe, okay? It's because, one, he supposedly marched all the vermin, the snakes, into the sea. Well, so the water is polluted and you can't drink it. You know, you have to drink distilled liquors. Now, the reality is there's no physical evidence there was ever any snakes on Ireland to begin with. But there's also when he returned to Ireland, and he performed a miracle very similar to Christ, where, you know, Christ turned the water into the wine. Well, he was very thirsty. They gave him a pitcher, I think it was a pitcher of water or whatever, he turned it into wine, but it didn't empty, and he got drunk drinking it, okay? And they're saying, well, my contribution to St. Paddy's Day, Father Michael, what do you have to tell us about it?
Yeah, I got some more interesting facts. James, I think it's interesting, in light of what you were talking about, that St. Patrick was abducted as a 16-year-old boy and brought to Ireland by Irish raiders and sold into slavery. You were talking about that very problem. But, yeah, let me give a little background. And, you know, Latin speaking and brought a lot of culture. I thought Rich was going to talk a little bit about what he and I have read in the past, how the Irish saved civilization. And the monastery certainly did a lot in preserving literature. But he's the patron saint of Ireland. He lived around the same years as St. Augustine, 385 to 461, and is one of the most beloved of all saints. His real name was Magonius Ducatus Patricius. He was a Roman citizen born in the Roman province of Britain, an unknown location, perhaps in the region of the Lower Severn in North Wales. Now, his father was a deacon, his grandfather was a priest, and that was not uncommon in those days. He was captured at the age of 16 by Irish raiders. He was taken to Ireland and sold into slavery. He tended flocks, and you know, they give the different areas that they believe he was in. During the 6 years he spent in servitude, Patrick underwent a profound religious transformation, did a lot of praying, and in the summer of 407 was commanded in a dream to escape. We always have that right. He journeyed some 200 miles, so maybe from my place in Virginia to Lower Maryland, to board a ship transporting Irish hounds to the continent. Upon landing in Gaul, modern France, which was under assault by Germanic and Gothic hordes, Patrick came into the spiritual care of the monastic institution of the region. One of his most notable teachers was St. Germanus, and Patrick took to his training, making possible the fulfillment of his absolute longing to the Irish apostolate. Now, as Patrick himself noted, the voice of the Irish cry out as one, or with one mouth. Basically, they asked him this: "We ask thee, boy, come and walk among us at once more." And so obviously he felt a call, kind of like the Macedonian call of St. Paul. In the confession, and I've read a lot of what Patrick has written, I've read other books by him, he declares his vocation to be a mandate of the divine, founded not upon human learning. And so his preparation for a return to Ireland was largely a spiritual one. Now, I've heard that he was in seminary as long as 9 years. There are some conflicting things. He admitted freely his lack of learning. Of course, when you live in the day of Augustine, anyone would say that. Writing that I blush and fear exceedingly to reveal my lack of education. Nevertheless, he mastered the essentials of the faith and grew very familiar with Scripture, although scholars have long questioned where exactly his education was conducted. Some agree that he spent some time in Gaul, but others prefer Britain as the place of his learning. Regardless of his length and location of learning, Patrick proved a brilliant missionary. He was not the first missionary bishop appointed to bring Christianity to the Irish. Palladius was named to the post in 431 by Pope St. Celestine, who reigned 422 to 432, but either died or, as seems likely, he met with little success and went to Scotland sometime after 431. In his place was appointed Patrick, who was consecrated a bishop and sent to the Irish mission. For the next 29 years, Patrick traveled across the five kingdoms of the island and won the conversion of virtually the whole Irish people. It is likely that in his latter years, he established Armagh as the see, the bishop's see of Ireland. He wrote before his death, hence did it come to pass in Ireland that those who never had knowledge of God have now been made a people of the Lord and are called sons of God. His two primary achievements were the promotion of a native clergy and the careful integration of the Christian faith with native Irish Celtic culture. Now, he did a lot for the culture, as the church has all through the world and in Europe, as Rich alluded to. He used a simple, sincere biblical style of preaching that won both hearts and minds. Unfortunately, details of his life and labors are fraught with questions owing to the large body of legends that sprang up about him and the general unreliability of the main source available, which is a Life of St. Patrick. And there's certain Irish annals and certain breviaries. Patrick himself was the author of Confessio, a moving testimony of his personal faith, and a letter to Coroticus, which I've read both, a troublesome chieftain. Legends about St. Patrick abound, perhaps the most famous being that, as Rich mentioned, of his expulsion of snakes from Ireland. National holidays in honor are held in numerous countries, including Ireland and the United States and even Russia. And the feast day, the day he died, is March 17th. I just want to read one little other passage contributes to our understanding of his mission, because there's been, you know, a great many priests that have come even to our day from Ireland. He said, among the most successful apostles of Christianity was Patrick, a Latin-speaking Gaelic monk, a Romanized Celt himself, who converted an entire people. The only other example of a whole nation converted by a single person is that of Armenia, the first Christian nation converted by St. Gregory the Illuminator at the beginning of the 4th century, a decade before the Edict of Toleration, that's under Constantine. Patrick was a pragmatic missionary. If it worked and was not immoral, he used it. He ordained the second or third son of chieftains as priests, even if they were married, despite the requirement of celibacy mandated by the regional or plenary council of Elvira in 371. Although it wasn't that early for everyone, but there were mention of that. He identified the church so much with the tribes that to this day, Irish diocesan borders are a crazy quilt, with one diocese having churches within another because they follow tribal lines 600 years old, 1600 years old. Patrick was a monk who trusted monks, thus the Irish church became strongly monastic, It's bishops being celibate monks of a strict rule. He set up schools to teach Roman culture, which in time became the best schools in Europe. And, of course, the church started all the best colleges anyway. Nevertheless, he let the people use many Celtic religious customs to express the new faith, and thus a fourth powerful cultural influence entered the expression of Western Christianity. So quite a deposit, you know, the many years that he devoted to the country. And, you know, it's been said with some of the turn that it's taken in like the area of abortion and things of that nature of late. But for the most part, you know, he's quite a hero. And, you know, we celebrate all that he accomplished on this day.
I can now that you've told the story, I can talk about how St. Patrick's movement in Ireland ended up saving civilization and spreading Christianity. Because
right.
from what I read, is the early Roman Catholic Church focused on the big cities, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to, there's not, according to what I read, there's not a lot of pushing the Christianity out. We're assuming they did, but everything is focusing on the cities and the bishops. And so Patty does is he converts. They haven't civilized the barbarians and stuff, or Christianized them. So when after Patrick converts Ireland, the entire country to Christianity, and you talked about the schools. So he set
yeah.
up these schools to train monks. Well, in that time frame, if you wanted like to be a saint, you wanted to go to heaven, you wanted to be martyred. And that is, remember, the way Jesus died was to set an example for everybody following after him. Well, the problem mm-hmm. is, by this time, Christians are no longer being martyred. So the monks came up with this idea of what was called green martyrdom. In other
mm-hmm.
words, they would retreat into the woods, find them a place, and build them a hut, and live an isolated life, okay, and not talk to anybody. And all of a sudden,
and some
they got
of them
a following.
Were in the desert because that waterless place is where the demons are. So it was a different
right.
kind of
okay.
warfare.
That's
mm-hmm.
that fits, but they wanted mm-hmm. to remove themselves from the population.
Right. That's
but
right.
One of the points is you got to keep do something to keep yourself busy. They liked reading. They that's the other thing. The Celts did not have a written language. So to be able to read the Bible, you had to learn to read and write in Latin. That's another
mm-hmm.
thing that Patrick had done for the Irish. And once they did, they had this voracious appetite for literature. I mean, they're all storytellers, okay?
Right.
And they had preserved, the Celtic tradition was to preserve all these stories and histories through oral tradition. And so now they can read and write. They start, remember, the light is going out in Europe. And so there's all these libraries that no one is reading. The barbarians have taken over. And so the Irish start
mm-hmm.
and transcribing them. That's what they do. So these green revolutions, these little hermits in the woods begin to build monasteries. And they just sit there and busy themselves transcribing books, the Bible.
Right.
But the thing is, they're transcribing a lot of secular books. So they
yes.
they expand a lot. They save a lot of the literature that we have today and expand it upon it, right? And then when you get into you start getting into the 5th and 6th century, these monks then begin to, they want to be martyred. So they go to Scotland, they go to Norway, they go to all these other countries. For example, the name Kilblaine, my last name, is Gaelic for like heaven or church. And so Kilblaine means the Church of St. Blaine. And Blaine was a 6th century Irish monk or saint who went to west coast of Scotland and spread the gospel there and converted, you know, the west coast of Scotland into Christianity. And there's actually three Kilblaines, three churches named Kilblaine in the Argyles and the Island of Bute. Okay, so that is how, and so they go into Europe and they pretty much spread, you know, Christianity among the people the Roman, you know, the Christians were not trying to convert.
The word Pagano, which was my wife's maiden name, were the people who were from the country, and just like you stated, Rich, who did not have the gospel. They were the country people. And you mentioned about how St. Patrick, you know, went into all of the counties, not just to the main cities, even though he established his see later on.
Well, Patrick knew he had to win the Lords over first, and
yes,
then he spread it to the people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Now, James, you're Irish too, are you not?
Actually, I think most of the people who settled West Virginia are Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's in particular Lowland Scots, you know, because after the Jacobite, I think it was Jacob. Anyway, when I think it's James becomes the king of England, and he was originally the king of Scotland, unifies Scotland and Ireland, that you had the border region with the border reavers who were raiding back and forth across the English-Scottish border, the Lowland Scots. They all of a sudden is like, hey, we're all now one country. You can't do this anymore. And they're going, this is the only lifestyle we know. Okay, go to Ireland, Northern Ireland. We got these plantations. So they go over there and they find out they ain't any more welcome over there than they were in England and where they came from. And so when the opportunity avails itself, many of those families emigrate too. And you joke about it, especially a lot of them were coming in through Philadelphia because, all right, you know, during colonial times, each state had its own religion. And if you remember, if you remember any of your high school, grade school schooling on American history, William Penn created the Great Experiment. And that was that the colony of Pennsylvania would
Quaker.
Well, he was a Quaker, but you got to understand, the Quakers were coming in after, so you have the Dutch in their primary Catholics.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So you got the Quakers coming in, and the Great Experiment is that we could have a colony that is accepting of all religions. So if you're the Scottish had converted to
Presbyterian.
That's right. Oh,
right.
And what's unique about the thing about the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church is authority. The Catholic Church has a pope that appoints everybody underneath them. You don't vote. You don't elect your priest in the Catholic Church. You know, the pope will send you one. And I believe it's similar to the Anglican Church. But see, the Scottish, they're like, no, we only follow leaders we admire. And so the Presbyterian Church basically is we elect our preachers. If we don't like them, we can fire them, okay? That's what I think is really the big difference culturally among the Presbyterians, okay?
And they're heritage from John Calvin.
And so they go west, so they go to so the Irish and the Irish Catholics and the Scottish Presbyterians are immigrating to Pennsylvania, and the Quakers need these guys. Why? Because the Quakers are pacifists, and they got an Indian problem on their frontier border. So who's the nastiest people you could imagine from Europe? The Irish, okay? So who do you want between you and the savages of the indigenous population? The Irish, because they're just one step up, okay? Now, the Irish are savages. You need a buffer between you and them. That's where the Scottish come in. Okay, that kind of like nails down this whole process. So yes, Pennsylvania's opened their arms to the Irish and Scottish, but they're like, hey, we really need you on this frontier. And when they hit the Appalachian Mountains, which is supposedly the end of the westward expansion, they head south down what the Indians had called the Warrior Road, because the Cherokee down in the Carolinas and stuff, and we're going to war with the Iroquois. It was the Iroquois Nation and the Cherokee. They're constantly fighting, and they're going in this, what we'd call the Shenandoah Valley, was the Great Warrior Trail, and it ended up becoming the Great Wagon Trail. So these Scotch-Irish immigrants are migrating south, and they expand from there into West Virginia and then down into North Carolina. So that is why most of your the old names in the back country are really of Scottish descent.
Now, did we have Irish fighting with us during the Civil War for the North?
Oh my God! We had. All right, we know the Irish Brigade, Catholic Regiment. Now, it's a good question. Here's the thing. If you're going to ask about the Civil War. So you had Irish regiments on the south and Irish regiments in the north fighting against each other.
69.
Now, the Irish Catholics in the south, when they looked at the Confederacy, what they saw was a group of states that wanted to separate themselves from a centralized government that's trying to tell them how to live their lives. Now, if you go back to Ireland, what was their problem with England? They don't like the idea of another country trying to tell them how to do their business. So if you want to look at what cause the Irish are going to identify with more, it's going to be the Southern cause. And percentage-wise, more Irish are going to serve in the Confederate Army than are going to serve in the Union Army. But here's the issue. Far more Irish Catholics in the North than there is in the South.
Right.
Now, why we create these Irish regiments, well, especially the Irish Brigade, is because, you know, Thomas Marr, is an Irish rebel, and he has this idea that one, you got to understand the Civil War, not the Civil War, the Mexican War. All right. During the Mexican War, most of the books I read don't even mention this. What did you say St. Patrick's real name was?
Yeah, I've got it right here. Magonius Ducatus Patricius.
Patricius. No,
yes.
That's what I wanted to hear, the Patricius. Because the Mexican army, enough Irish and German Catholics defected to the Mexican army during the Mexican War to form a battalion. And it was called the San Patricio Battalion.
Interesting.
They used the Latin name.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's the problem. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So the American army goes down there, and we have an inherent fear of Catholicism because in America, and that is we question whether Catholics owe their allegiance to the Pope in Rome or the
right.
country. And we mm-hmm. fear, of course, we always fear the unknown. So, of course, there is a Catholic phobia in America.
Right.
And so now the problem is you're an Irish immigrant or a German immigrant. You come into this country. There's no jobs for you. What do? Join the army. Then all of a sudden you're going to war with another Catholic country. Hmm. So all these officers, these Protestant officers, are fearing the loyalty of their men. So they become abusive of the Catholics, which drives a number of them to defect. But I can't remember his name, John Taylor or something. The name of the guy becomes the battalion commander. All right, so they get down to what now becomes Fort Brown, which becomes Brownville, Texas, and I think uh-huh. Matamoros is across the river. Now, most of these Irish Catholics have never had communion, you know, given to them by a Catholic priest. And there's Catholic
right.
church across the river. So they're all going across the river for services and communion, okay? Because you can explain it among, you know, because the Catholics then believe that that wafer and that wine is the body and blood of Christ. And so,
right.
you know, like today, you hand it to us, right? You hand it to us,
mm-hmm.
and we put it in your mouth. But back then, the priest had to put it on your tongue.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody can just give communion. So you've got these devout Catholics are going, hey, there's a Catholic priest over here. I can do communion, which is very important to them. So they go over there. War is declared, and they're caught on the wrong side of the river, and they can't get back. They're considered defectors.
Oh,
a number of the early defectors were going, we didn't defect. We just came over here for communion, and we couldn't get back. So anyway, they form, and here's the issue. You think that Mexican soldier really had his heart in this war? No, he didn't, because he got treated like crap. Now,
I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the San Patricio Battalion in the war? Yeah, because if they lose, mm-hmm. those that defected after the declaration of war will be hung, and they were. Those that defected, John Riley, Sergeant John Riley became the commander of the San Patricio Battalion. So those that were, you know, supposedly defected beforehand, they're just going to be branded with a D on their cheeks, their face, okay? And they'll be released. And that's why if you look at, like, Anthony Quinn, what nationality is Anthony Quinn? He plays every nationality. He's played an
right.
Arab in Lawrence of Arabia. He played a Greek,
mm-hmm.
Onassis. You know, he plays all. He's Mexican. But Quinn is an Irish name. So how does
right.
a Mexican have an Irish name? There's lots of Mexicans with Irish names because they're descendants of the San Patricio Battalion. Okay. So anyway, these guys, you know, there's like, I can't remember which battle or whatever, that the Americans, the Mexican soldiers are about to break and run. The Irish were given artillery. So they're fighting there, keeping the Americans across the bridge. The Mexicans are about to break and run, and they rally. The Mexicans are threatened to kill them if they run. Okay, the Irish have a bigger stake in the Mexican victory than the Mexicans did. So it's a really interesting story. But the thing is, so we go into the Mexican War. No, we go into the Civil War. That wasn't the Mexican War. The, you know, American Mexican War ended in 1848. It wasn't that long ago. So we're now 1861,
right. mm-hmm.
and people are questioning the loyalty of these Catholics. And so they want to prove that they are Americans. So they, in, they, you know, they, hey, look, there was enough Germans to form an entire corps in the American, in the Union Army. And the Irish were serving under the emerald green flag with the harp in regiments, okay? And it wasn't just the Irish Brigade, which was made up of Pennsylvania and Massachusetts, but there were other Irish regiments, pure
wasn't
Irish
there
Catholic
a New York
regiments.
One too? Wasn't there a
what?
New York? Was that World War II? Wasn't the 69th?
Oh,
Irish?
You're talking about you're talking about, okay, that's the 69th. The 69th in New York was,
yeah.
You're right, was part of the Irish Brigade, goes back,
uh-huh.
And it will remain. It will have its heritage. And so in World War One, not World War Two, World War One,
mm-hmm.
It goes over there and fights as a, because they make a movie about it with James Cagney.
Yeah.
Okay, and I forgot
the name
of it. I saw
the chaplain. The chaplain said there are no cowards in heaven when they were attacking. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
with
that's
James
one
Cagney,
thing
yeah.
about it. No, no. See, the thing is, you know, when you get to the Civil Gettysburg, okay,
mm-hmm.
See, by that time, let's look, Antietam, they
mm-hmm.
lost 50% of their strength. They were thrown into the mm-hmm. breach and lose 50% of their strength. Then they go into another 50. They're already down 50%. They lose another 50%. There's
wow.
like two, a brigade. See, there's supposedly like 1,000 men per regiment, and a regiment and a brigade consists of four regiments. The Irish Brigade, when it finishes Fredericksburg, it's down to 200 men. Okay,
wow.
And one of the regiments was brand new. They got thrown in with it. So I think by the time they get to Gettysburg, oh, and their beloved commander, Thomas Francis Marr, is relieved. And he's their inspiration for all this. And now they're beginning to question things. They're beginning to doubt. And when I teach the story, when I would take officers out on staff rides and we'd talk about the Irish Brigade, here's a story of resiliency. So by Gettysburg, they're beginning to question their participation in this war. First of all, they don't identify with the American cause. They identify more with the Southern cause. They want independence. They want
uh-huh.
independence in Ireland, and the South wants independence. They have more in common with the Southerners, okay?
Right.
And the guy who's like, hey, let's prove our value to the American army, to the Americans, and then we get all this training, we go back to Ireland, and we free Ireland. He's gone. So they're getting to go into one of the bloodiest fights of the second day of Gettysburg, the wheat field,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the chaplain, army chaplain, I'm forgetting his name, he becomes the president of
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
in,
what's the
Oberlin
what?
Or you're talking about? Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I've read about him.
Yeah,
he
becomes the president
forward.
Of what's it? Irish school?
Is it
college?
Oberlin or something?
No.
In Maine?
No,
that's not the one.
We had the no, not that. The Irish on Brain Injury Radio. I've been hit in the head so many times. It'll come to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the Fighting Irish. What's a college that's the Fighting Irish is the mascot?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. That's right. Notre Dame. Oh, anyway. So, you know, even in the movie Gettysburg, it shows the scene. It just shows a glimpse of it. And that is where he realizes the doubts these men have. So what does he do? As they're marching towards the wheat field to plug a gap, he stops them. He stands on this rock. You go to that rock, and they have a bronze statue of him. And what does he do? He gives absolution to the entire brigade. In fact, the Protestant onlookers, the generals who are watching it, even take their hats off. Now, for a Catholic, when the priest gives you absolution, what does that mean?
You're forgiven
of everything.
Yep.
So as you're marching to your death, you may not know whether you live, you survive this battle, but you know where you're going, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the Irish Brigade makes history in the wheat field.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's an interesting day. This is St. Patty's Day. You know, that's
yes.
An interesting story.
Give it to the
tell.
Irish.
Yeah.
Now, that was very interesting, Rich. That was very helpful to fill in the gaps and, you know,
well,
even
hold
with
it, hold
cultural
it, hold
stuff.
It. Look, you know, when I was teaching the lieutenants, you know, I would talk about, you know, why history? Why do we study history? And one of the questions is there anything to learn about your culture in the Army? Why, okay, you talk about critical race theory. Okay. Why should we study African-American history in the U.S. Army? Well, if you're African-American, you're probably interested in it. If you descend from the Irish, you're probably interested in the history of the Irish. And if you're Native American, you're probably interested in the Native American contribution to American history and that. And what I point out is, if you take a snapshot in time, look, African, everybody, if you were not white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, descending from nobility, in other words, a Norman family, you had a struggle. Okay, you had a struggle in this country.
Uh-huh.
And some
right.
cultures had a harder struggle than others. And like you and I joke, I said, you know, the Irish are so happy to see the Italians. They're like, thank God for the Italians. We got somebody we could look at them on.
Right. But then they married each other, went to war with each other.
Yeah, but I love you know, there's that book about how the Irish and the Italians finally reconcile their differences. Go, wait, what is it? One cardinal says, hey, look, you guys got more, probably should be fighting each other. And then, so what happens is the Irish become hitmen for the Italian mafia.
Yeah.
Because of all this intermarriage. But anyway, but I point out, I said, the African Americans had a harder and longer struggle than any other culture. And it's worth studying. But if you just look at a snapshot in time, you're going to say, oh, this country's racist. But if you look at the whole process, you're going, no, it ain't. We really do embrace this idea that all men are created equal. We just got a lot of stumbling blocks, okay, that we have to overcome. We got a lot of baggage we brought from Europe that we have to overcome.
Yep.
All right? So anyway,
absolutely.
I think we've done a really good tribute to St. Patrick.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. And what he has contributed to, not just to Europe but to America,
Mexico,
they still remember the San Patricio Battalion. Okay, they honor it because it was the most elite unit in their army, fought harder than the damn Mexicans did. Okay, yeah.
For purpose.
So anyway, so we want to talk two
James
things.
Wants to...
The war with the cartels, making the declaring the cartels as terrorists, and the drone. So go ahead and lead the conversation.
Was James going to engage you with that?
No, I think he wanted to turn it over to you.
Okay.
Because you know, I'll tell you, James is just going to go on a rant. You and I might actually have
that's good.
We might have a more civil discussion than he would.
You know,
okay.
Let's talk about Elliot Ness and the beginnings of the FBI with the mafia, and make some kind of a comparison in how that might work without declaring war on Italy. Okay, because we mentioned in the Second World War, we did, you know, go to the mob as far as Sicily was concerned to give us some intel. But is there a better way?
Well, they went to the
handling
mob
the situation.
To make sure the port stays open. Because remember, the union
was
controlled by the mafia.
Right.
So we made deals. We made deals with the mafia during World War II to make sure the port didn't close.
Right. Yeah. So how do you think you can make war on the cartels without making war on the country?
You can't. All right. Here's the issue. All right.
Uh-huh.
I'd mentioned this the last time we had the discussion. You go down and talk to the Mexicans. All right.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me back up. You talk to Muslims, and they will talk about the Crusades like it happened yesterday.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You go down to the diehard South, not all these damn carpetbaggers and stuff. No, people that their ancestors. You know, they can go to this old plantation house and tell you that used to be mine. Okay, my ancestors owned it. Okay, you talk to the people from the South. They talk about the Civil War yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
Yesterday.
I had to read so much.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
You go down to Mexico, they talk about the Mexican-American War as if it took place yesterday because Mexico lost one-third of its territorial possessions to the United States. They lost big time. If you're a big-time loser in a war, guess what? You just don't forget it. And
well,
I point that out.
The Catholics from 1453, Rich. There's still heartburn where the Latins were supposed to come and help them. And
oh, yeah,
instead,
you're right. You're right.
You know?
You're right.
And so that's
the schism between Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholics is because of that. You're right. They haven't forgotten
They're talking past each other. That's why I tried to do my dissertation to bring some unity, but there's such deep wounds. That's a very good approach.
Right.
That's a very good approach
and the thing
about
is,
Mexico.
Your dissertation was to point out that the differences are so trivial.
Right. Cultural, linguistic, but not real.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I really enjoyed that because you're looking at them as a Protestant, I'm going, yeah, the only difference between you guys is what kind of hat you wear.
Yeah.
Oh, and how you paint your how you paint the walls in your church.
You make it sign of the cross.
Yeah.
No, but that's interesting in the psyche of the country.
That's right.
Going back,
and you've got to keep
that
in mind.
That is very, very insightful.
That's very good. All right,
you've
got to go. So when you go and listen to what the president of Mexico said after Crenshaw said we needed the label. All right, a lot of people have been talking about it, but Crenshaw actually wants to put it before Congress, where we label the cartel as terrorist organizations. Now, I listened to his interview. He does not advocate unilateral action against Americans invading Mexico or doing, strike against the cartel. What he said was, we label them as terrorist organizations. It opens the options. It allows us those options. And he said we need to do it to put pressure on the Mexican government. If you can't do your job, we will.
Right.
It's not we want to do it. We want you to do it. And we're willing to help. That's his real message. So anybody advocating we need to go down there and do it, guess what? Listen to what the president said after Crenshaw made his statement. And he said, we will not allow American intervention into here. The people will not allow it. And he's right, because they still remember we invaded their country not only in 1846, but also 1914, we went in and took over Veracruz, and then once again. And guess what? So Pancho Villa is at war with the president. I think it's Duarte, or Diaz, and he's a rebel. He's losing. So guess what he does? He up until the raid in Columbus, New Mexico, he was receiving support from the Americans.
Hmm.
So he raids into, all of a sudden, we want revenge. So we form a punitive expedition under John J. Pershing, chases Pancho Villa deep into Mexico. Do we ever catch him? No, we don't. But guess what? That punitive expedition exposed the weakness of the Diaz government, and it was overthrown. Pancho Villa achieved his objective by provoking us to unilaterally invade Mexico. Yeah, what are we doing? We're going after the enemy of the Mexican government. What we ended up doing is Pancho Villa wanted us to do. It embarrassed the Diaz government, and it was overthrown.
Anybody advocating
unilateral action into Mexico do not understand the problem.
Uh-huh. When the Mexican president talks about, you know, hugs, not bullets, do you think that he's in their pocket, or is he, you know, having
a different
strategy?
All right, let me ask you this. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna rephrase that question.
Mm-hmm. Remember the Alamo.
Why do you think Trump's not a politician? Trump was not a politician. Why do you think, as James described, people who have never held a real job in their life, career politicians, who are billionaires, want to keep the border open? Why do you think they want to keep the border open?
For votes, no?
You say votes? You think they're getting paid kickbacks? We're beginning to find out that the Biden family, the entire family, has been receiving money from China.
Yep.
Okay.
I saw that.
Is that just the Biden family? How does guys like Bernie Sanders, and, you know, you look at all these politicians, you're working on a government salary and you're billionaires.
Right. Yep,
how in the hell
can you
do that without being a crook? Where are you getting this money? You don't make that much money. You're a government employee, okay? I love the scene in Casablanca, you know, where the French police commissioner, he's like, I'm only a poor, corrupt official, government official, okay? But anyway, I'm going, why do you think they want to keep that border open? You said votes. Okay, because all those Latin immigrants, let me tell you about the Latin culture. All right. They are very religious. Okay,
right.
They're all Catholics. They're very religious. What we know about Catholics is they're anti-abortion, okay? Very family-oriented, okay? They want to, like, they don't want to put their abuelitas in nursing homes. They will take care of their grandmothers, okay? They will, all right? And they're going to work hard. They're going to, every Latin immigrant I've met in this country is a hard worker. They'll work two or three jobs to get ahead. And guess what they want to do with their money? You
Send
think they want
home.
To give their money to people who don't work? No, they want to keep it. What party do you think they identify with?
The
Democrats are saying, hey, we're going to allow you into this country, so you're going to vote for us, and they're going to go, yeah, but you're going to take my money away, the money I worked hard for, and, by the way, you're against everything I'm culturally for. Oh, and many of these immigrants are coming from communist countries, socialist countries. No, I'm going, hey, look, all right. This is me being my cruel self, and I know you lost a daughter to fentanyl. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
They are voluntarily taking that drug. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right? And, yes, we are – see, there's a lot of people killing themselves. But guess what?
Yeah, you
there's
said
a whole
it,
lot
you
of hard, broken lads going to come in and take their place, and they don't
it.
Use drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being very, very callous right now, but the thing is, we're in a process of replacing drug users, people who want to kill themselves to get this high, with people
right.
who don't use drugs, want to come in here. They, I'm telling you right now, for the Republican Party out there, every Latin immigrant is a potential Republican. Okay. They have your values, all right? And they want to embrace the American dream, along with all the other immigrants in here. I just listened to the Oscar speeches, and what? The Asian just dominated the Oscars, and I think the guy that got the best supporting male actor, he's like, you know, he came over as a Vietnamese refugee.
Yep.
He's going, I'm living the American dream. It does exist. You're not hearing that from liberals. They're all woke. The American dream doesn't exist. But for an immigrant, the American dream does exist. Anyway,
I think every immigrant, just like I'll cite the mafia. Now, my grandfathers or people who came over were looking for something. I don't know, my one grandfather, not so much so. But I don't think it's true of everyone, but I think what you're saying is the majority, and I agree with you.
All right. You want to know why Hitler feared America more than any other country in the world? You want to know why? He understood the psyche. And he's like, to give up. All right, see – most of us live in our comfort zone. How many of the listeners out there are willing to give up everything you've got right now? Sell off your home, all your possessions. Pack up and risk everything.
Yeah, my grandfather
country.
Did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what Hitler understood is, see, the people that are wanting, he said, America was sucking up the best of all the other countries.
Hmm.
See, you know, it was like those that are born rich are going to stay rich. The people that are born poor, that's like Haiti. Okay, so I'm sitting there and I'm working. I got sent down there. I've been studying Haiti ever since Baby Doc because I was a special ops planner during that crisis. And so then I get sent back down in 2010 with the earthquake, and we got this sergeant in the United States Army who is born in Haiti, and he's one of our interpreters. And I told him, I said, because of my experience from the initial planning, we identified all our native speaking Haiti, because they don't speak French. They speak French Creole, and not the French Creole in Louisiana. It's a unique dialect. So we needed and every Haitian, you know, every Haitian in the American Army that I met was a first class soldier. I asked him about that. I said, I mean, you're looking at this country, it's destitute. But when I look at Haitians in America, they're all like really, really good. He goes, because the best leave. See, there's no upward mobility. You're born poor.
That's a good point.
The caste system, you're going to stay poor. The ones who want to struggle to get better are going to leave this country.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why Hitler feared America. Because I'm telling you, you know, what makes this country great is all those immigrants are willing to risk everything to get here. The thing now, if you listen to me, say, well, then we need to open our borders. No, there's only so many jobs we can support.
Right.
That's what's missing. Yeah. Okay. So we've got an indigenous population that is lazy and wants to kill themselves with drugs, don't want to work. Yeah. Well, this is the callous side of me. Let them. Okay. Because we've got a lot of hardworking immigrants that want to come in here and embrace American values. Okay. And what is American values? We're really a hodgepodge. Okay. We are a melting pot. Yes.
But I know of people, exactly what you're saying, you know, and I'm thinking of my one grandfather, you know, he and his wife were farmers in Italy, but he came, he worked as a garbage man, he worked in the factory, but he owned like a 2-3 family house. You know, I mean, he did quite well for himself. You know, when they went to pick my father up at Fort Stewart from New Jersey, had a nice car, the whole family went. And I would say they lived upper middle class. And no, I think you're right. People who go.
Hey, let me give you, here's my favorite example. Here's my favorite example. Okay.
When I went to England in school.
Through my wife, my Latin wife, I've gotten to know a lot of Latin immigrants, both legal and illegal. But this one guy, he comes into this country from Costa Rica.
Uh-huh.
Joined the Navy, enlisted in the Navy. Now, first of all, population qualifies for military service. The rest of them can't qualify. Okay.
Right.
This guy comes, and then what is it? Less than 1% even enlist. So this guy comes in, leaves his country, comes to our country, enlists in the Navy for 4 years. Why? He can expedite his citizenship. And he gets a GI Bill. So I can't tell you how many people I've met who are like, man, I would love, you know, being a professional in Israel. Man, I would love to do what you do. Well, first thing you got to do is get a bachelor's degree, but the job requires a master's degree. And when you talk about that, like, oh, I don't have the time to do it. So here's this guy who comes in here, gets out of the Navy, got the GI Bill. He worked 3 jobs, not 1 job. 3 jobs at the same time and went college on the GI Bill. Now, after he got his associate, the shipyard hired him. Okay. Now he's got 1 full-time job and they're allowing him to finish his degree because they want him to finish his degree. He completes his degree. Then he goes for his master's degree and he then pays his wife, who has no interest in him, he pays her to go to college. Why do you think he paid her to go to college? She's not going to go get a job. She's just going to be a mother because it sets an example for his kids.
Sure. I have an uncle who came to this country in 1950 from Ukraine. You talk about a hard worker. I mean, unbelievable. When I used to work with him when I was a kid, you know, we used to work in the movies picking up garbage and stuff. And he used to say to me, what's the matter? You have bones in your stomach? You can't bend. You know, I mean, he worked 2-3 jobs. And so.
This country is strong because of the immigrants that come here. Mm-hmm. They make us a great country.
No, I agree. I'm a grandson of immigrants, so I've been to Italy with a 40% unemployment rate for young people.
Yeah,
I just don't believe
you've been to the home of your family, right?
Yes, I have. I've been to every 4 villages of all my grandparents. Yes, and you tell people your name and they know right away who you are. That long ago. Are we there?
Hey. Yeah, we are, but I got my grandson here and he wants me to turn the lights on for him. So I'm walking around the house, okay? There we go. Okay. I don't know where he's going. He's right in the dark. Okay. Okay, there we go. He's set. Okay. Anyway, so let's get back. So So we've digressed from going to war with Mexico. The thing is,
right?
The thing is, we really have to think this through. We cannot
but explain
do
the
a
Alamo though
action.
To us before we go on with that. Explain the Alamo to us before we go on.
Well, the Alamo. Okay, so all right. What happened was, okay, you remember I told you about how the Quakers wanted the Catholics
yes.
and the Scottish Presbyterians mm-hmm. as a buffer between them and the Indians?
Right.
The Mexican government wanted the same thing. So they invited all these. They didn't have a large population in Texas because of the damn Comanches, the most warlike but the best horse cavalrymen on the face of the earth. Okay, the Comanche.
Mm.
And the Apache.
Mm-hmm.
So they invited all these white settlers to come in, but they had to swear allegiance to the Mexican government because they knew that, and again, that's the same fear we had of the Irish and German Catholics is they didn't identify with the American government. They identified with the Pope, okay? So,
right,
so
right.
Santa Ana is like, okay, you can settle into here, but you have to swear an allegiance to us because what we don't want is a whole bunch of immigrants coming in and then saying, hey, we're Americans and we want to be part of America, the United States. Okay, but that's what happens. That's what happens, okay? And so Santa Ana is going, all right, so I'm going to march my army up there and I'm going to force you guys to return to your oath of allegiance to the Mexican government. And so the Alamo is the first defense, and it
right.
basically buys time for Sam Houston to raise
right.
and train an army, okay? But what were you thinking of when you brought up the example
no,
of the Alamo?
The conflict and the complexity you mentioned earlier, England and Ireland. We mentioned the Orthodox and the Catholics, you know, the North and the South. There's so many layers. And I think you have been trying to instruct us in the last few weeks on the show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
That,
yeah.
You know,
okay.
Yeah,
so,
that's what
yeah,
I'm
you're
at.
Right. So what's happened
mm-hmm.
is, so Santa Ana thinks he's going to kick these Anglos' ass and make them remind them of their oath to the Mexican government. What does he do? He creates a rebellion, and he gets himself captured. Okay, and he has to sign. He gets captured, and he has to. I think it's the Treaty of Guadalupe or something like that that he has to capitulate. Okay. Now, the thing is, he's like, that's okay. I've lost Texas. But if the United States annexes Texas, that's the big issue. The United States annexes Texas. This was 1836. So if the United States annexes Texas, I'm going to war with the United States. Well, and that was a big political debate. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, we annex Texas. And we go to war. Yeah.
You
so
mentioned Guadalupe.
There's a lot of cultural issues involved in this. So everybody is saying we need to go to war with the cartel. Mike, you're talking about going to war with the entire country of Mexico. And for one, we have a president who does not want to start another war. He screwed
yeah.
up the last one we were in, okay? Remember Afghanistan. So it ain't going to happen.
You mentioned Guadalupe. I don't know if you've seen on my desk, but Doreen bought me a calendar this year, you know, of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to
different Guadalupe,
like 1531,
gotta remember, a lot of the place names here in America are after places in Europe, okay? The lady—I don't think the Lady Guadalupe is Mexican.
Oh,
maybe
yes.
Wrong.
Oh, No, oh,
she
definitely.
Is?
1531.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She revealed herself.
I stand
herself.
Corrected.
But
I
you were talking
corrected.
About the religiosity and what took place there. We have some friends that are leaving for Mexico City tomorrow. They do missions work. And, there's been a lot going on with the pilgrimage there. And, that's a part of the fabric of who they are. That whole apparition.
All right. Let
there.
Me bring this up. Let me bring this up because we only got like 9 minutes left. Okay.
Yeah.
A thought occurred to me. COVID.
Mm-hmm.
COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the reason I believe COVID escaped from the Wuhan lab.
Mm-hmm.
A virus does not want to kill its host because if its host dies, it dies.
Okay.
The ideal situation, it's like most of these viruses live in bats, and they never kill the bats. When they transfer over to humans, humans get really sick, okay?
Hmm.
But the thing is, it wants to live. The virus wants to live in its host. And I remember listening to when they're talking about the variants, and everybody's afraid of the variants. He said, no. The variants are going to be milder symptoms because as it mutates, it does not want to kill its host. The COVID virus that was spreading was killing its host, which to me means it was weaponized. It was gain of function. That's what these biological labs do, is turn mild viruses into lethal weapons. Okay. The thing is, and he said this, that as this virus mutates, it's going to return. COVID has always been around. It was a mild form of the flu.
Right.
It's going to return to a mild form of the flu, and that's where it's at. Okay. So let's look at the cartel as a virus. It's a virus.
Mm-hmm.
Does this virus want to die? No. It wants to live. Americans want to supply the customer with fentanyl, but they don't want
Blind
to die
demand.
Doing
mm-hmm.
it. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So as we, we're saying, hey, we're going to declare, we're going to come after you. We're going to do this and do that. Okay. They're going to go, hey, we're going to tone this down. Now, the thing is, we're not going to stop supplying you with fentanyl because you want it and we want your money. Okay, but what we're going to do is we're going to cut down on the kidnapping and the assassinations, the things that you don't like. Okay? So,
yeah, like
you,
what,
yeah, all right,
the
so
mafia
you're thinking,
provided.
You know, we're trying to identify the cartel as a terrorist organization. I'm saying, now, think of them as a virus.
But like even the mafia provided, during Prohibition, and
right?
Then, prostitution, gambling,
right?
Obviously there were murders and all kinds of competition
between the
families.
Yeah, but you know what? The mafia had a rule about who they murdered. They did not kill good cops. They did not mess with the average citizen. They killed bad guys. They killed the competition. But they had rules against, never mess with never harm a bad cop. They respected the individual. There's a movie, I can't remember the name of it, and this one mafia guy comes in, and he's very respectful to these backcountry West Virginians, okay? And that was how the mafia was. And look, I have a my grandfather went to Chicago, something happened, he changed his name and never he severed contact with his family. Got a call from this one distant relative of mine who was like 5 years old, and he remembers because my grandfather had returned home after Chicago, returned to him, not returned to his parents' house, and then left.
Mm-hmm.
And then a sedan pulls up. And two men in suits get out, and they stop. This is farm country, Kansas, and they stand at the gate waiting for his. He walks up there with his mother. They're not bullies, okay? They wait respectfully, and they
right.
He comes up there and asks him, and they say, "Have you heard of? You know, do you know where we can find George Houston, who changed his name to Hugh William Kilblade?" And they go, "No, he was here a while ago and disappeared." And they're like, "Okay, thank you," and they left. The thing is, could have been the FBI, or that could have been the mafia. But the
right.
mafia would not have crossed that gate. They respected
I was listening to it. An ex mafia boss.
Yeah.
And he was talking about courtesy, classy dressing, you know, certain personas, which you're
right.
talking about, you know. Well, this guy that I debated in chaplain school, his father was a grand wizard for the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
And he was telling me, well, you know, they keep the white trash and line as well, and we had a big debate, you know, about, you know, how he's a chaplain for the National Guard in his state, you know, and he's kind of a proponent, you know, for the KKK, and you know, I think you could point out some positive things, but then there's some evil things at the roots, you know, and I think that's
right.
what we
no
need to
no
eradicate.
No, that is, yeah, the KKK has perverted Christianity.
That's right.
No doubt
exactly
about it.
Right.
They do not understand the essence of what
we
Jesus
have. 1 minute and 21 seconds
yeah.
left, guys. So
right.
got to close
now. It's the same thing.
All right. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, amen. We just ask St. Patrick to intercede for us. We thank you for the courage that your life has shown us, and we just thank you for this day and all that the Irish people have done since they responded positively to the gospel. We thank you, Lord, for this conversation tonight. We pray for all those people that were listening for something that could help their lives. Pray your blessing upon James and Rich and their families. In Jesus' name, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen.
Okay, and my last word is, all right, I two. God save the Irish and Aaron Goprah.
Yes.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening
Good
to Continue Mission.
God bless.
Next